We are now recording. This is podcast 20. I think it'll end up being podcast 20.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, depending on how I chop them up and divide them, and sometimes I number them and sometimes I don't. We're going to talk about what you had a perfect title for it. Stupid comedies, right? Like Airplane, movies that are, I wouldn't know if they're really parody movies. They kind of are, but they're good parody movies. And then there are, like, the more recent proper crap, right?
They turned into parody movies because the Naked Gun movies were parodies of the old, well, the Naked Gun was, first of all, came directly off of Police Squad, and I rented all those and watched them. Mm-hmm. There's only six of them, as it was canceled partway through, even though it was phenomenally critically acclaimed.
And then when was this? When was Police Squad?
Early 80s.
And it was a drama show, right?
No, Police Squad was exactly like Naked Gun. It was a network sitcom.
Oh, wow. This is before Cop Rock, of course.
Yes.
Okay.
And it was making fun of, like, Cannon and
T.J. Hooker.
Well, you know, all the cop procedural detective shows.
Mannix, that was, he's a P.I.
Basically, yeah. But it wasn't like a toy detective thing. It was definitely a cop thing. Cause
okay.
It was great because Drebin was the straight man, but it wasn't really, because he himself causes most of the problems that happen with his.
Well, yeah,
you know, he's kind of the old straight man who's not really a straight man, kind of like the Michael Bluth character who's really causing more problems than he thinks he's solving. But the show, they reused a few gags from the show for the movies because they figured ratings were so bad that no one must have seen the show.
Was O.J. and George Kennedy and Leslie Nielsen in the show?
George Kennedy and Leslie Nielsen were. O.J. was not.
Oh, wow. No,
yeah.
No,
George Kennedy was not. I'm sorry. His boss was actually, let me look this up really quick because it's important, because this guy was a really good actor, too. And Kennedy took over his role.
Well, Kennedy's a good actor, though.
Kennedy is a great actor. But his boss was, like, perfect for this. He was even more deadpan than Drebin was.
Fantastic.
And Kennedy plays more of, like, a pleading,
yeah,
like, calming person, and his boss was just exactly like Drebin. It made it really funny in the show because, like, they were so, like,
was it like Robert Stack or something?
No. Let me just look it up.
Craziness.
But it, so basically, and that show was based off a parody sort of thing, but you wouldn't watch those and think and see that they were directly ripping off anything until you got to, like, 33 and a third, which was just a pile of crap. Naked Gun 1 and Naked Gun 2.5 were, I think, very good standalone.
And Mr. Robert Goulet in 2.5, R.I.P.
R.I.P.
IRL, R.I.P.
We're going to talk about some comedies, but first, is there any other sort of, like, movie news you want to talk about?
Do you think that the new fall lineup is getting a break because of the writer's strike? But do you think that, because I'm thinking, like Seth and I were watching another episode of Caveman yesterday. And the sheer fact that that could even happen is staggering. Like, I'll be honest, it's not a terrible, terrible show. It's not as bad as you would think it would be. If you sat and watched one, you'd be like,
it's probably just like any normal sitcom, right?
Yeah, really. But it's a one camera. It's not a three camera. No.
That doesn't sound right. That should definitely be a three camera.
I think
it would be so bad. It would be good if they use
a million cave puns. Yeah. But they don't. And so at a certain point, you kind of forget the whole pretense of that. Even though they try to remind you of it all the time. But all these new shows, are they getting a break? Because usually the way they do it is they do a pilot, and then the networks decide to buy it, and they order, like, I don't know, 8 or 13 of them.
13.
And yeah, that's usually considered a season to some degree. And then, you know, they get shit canned after 3 episodes and they get no ratings. And then the DVD comes out and all the critically acclaimed ones and all that crap. And like, oh, with 5 unaired episodes.
Right.
But now,
we're
at the 8th episode of a lot of new shows. The 8th episode of Life, the 8th episode of Chuck, and things like this.
And so the second part of the first season for most of these shows have not yet been written, if they haven't been reordered yet.
But that's irrelevant. The point is that these shows are getting into their 8th episode. They're getting a pass that I think more of them are getting a pass this season because of the strike. Usually,
I see what you're saying, because there's no immediate replacements. So I see what you're saying.
What's going on? I mean, is it like the strike is now going to allow a show like Chuck to maybe get a second season where it normally probably would have been canceled after three
That's
or four
That's very interesting,
episodes.
Actually. That's a really interesting
Because
point.
Here's the thing. A lot of shows are going to take a while to get good. I mean, The X-Files was going to be canceled for like the first two or three seasons when it was on. I mean, it was on a crappy time. It was on Fridays at 9 for like the first 3 or 4 years. And it was a really good show, but the first season it kind of had to find its legs and, you know, do episodes that were really stupid here
and
there.
It eventually became, for Fox, something had good ratings, which was still not great compared to other shows, even though it was in a bad time slot. I think it was against something big on, like, I think a lot of times it aired against 60 Minutes or something until they moved it back.
It was on Fridays at 9, and then they moved it to Sundays at 9. And then they had the Simpsons, and then they had a half-hour block, and that they put Futurama in there for a while. And then they put Futurama on like 7 before King of the Hill.
Here's the sad thing is I understand that a lot of the shows, Fox has been almost right to really let these go. Because if you're going by pure ratings, they really haven't gotten great ratings on some of these fantastic shows. It's not their fault that Arrested Development did not get good ratings.
No, and Arrested Development got a lot of episodes. I recently watched, like last year, I watched all of them again.
They really gave it a decent shot.
It's got like almost 60 plus episodes. That's more than a lot of shows get.
You got to reach 100 for it to be syndicated, though.
It had 3 seasons. No, it's not. It's syndicated on G4.
Is it really?
I think for a while there they were showing reruns of Arrested Development.
There might be special exceptions, but I know that a show legally gets syndication if you reach 100, and that like
that's probably a big reason to cut a show off before 100 from other people's sides, huh? Because then they can rerun it, and they won't have to pay all this extra royalties.
So if somebody else wants to pay for it. One thing that I was just saying that Arrested Development was given a decent shot, but that's not totally true, because one thing they did was they moved it around.
Yeah,
like
it got
crazy.
Moved terribly.
And if you do that, people lose it. Yeah. That's one thing about...
But media markets are changing. That's what the Writers Guild strike... A big part of what it's about now is that things are online and things...
Yeah,
and people can see their stuff now, and time has become so irrelevant. Like, so what? When Arrested Development's actually scheduled to be on, you tell it on your DVR or your TiVo that you want to record it. And assuming these things have gotten smart enough at this point that they're not going to see the rerun and pick that 5 times and then miss the new one.
But the question is, how does that? How does a person being able to tape way more shows than they would normally watch? How does that affect Nielsen ratings? Because what the problem is that
I still don't understand how those
Nielsen
work.
ratings are very flawed. Here's how it works.
I do actually.
There are like one out of every umpteen people who get a Nielsen box who sign up to get this thing. They're volunteers. That's the first problem.
Mm-hmm.
The second problem is then they are supposed to estimate. First of all, based on what they watch, it's assumed that their friends and neighbors and family all watch the same thing.
Which is bullshit.
And then they also give input where they write things down and say, what do you think, for instance, your cousin across town is watching tonight? And they would write down, well, I assume they're watching this, stuff like that. It's all based on presumption.
For two weeks.
It's ridiculous.
For 2 or 3 weeks there, my brother was getting the paper ones, you know, where they were like, hey, do you,
really?
You know, we'll give you $10. And he would take the money and he would give it to me. And I, those 3 weeks, I would fill in that I was like watching the Saturday Adult Swim, which I was.
Yeah.
And Adult Swim is one of the only channels that shows their ratings.
They air their ratings
on Sunday nights.
They had 650,000 people watch Family Guy.
It used to be when they first started with Boondocks, and I think that's dropped off dramatically. And they were being all big and thinking they were going to get all political or whatever.
Yeah.
And that, you know, totally fell in their own
Nobody
face.
Wants politics.
Well, and Boondocks didn't end up being that.
Yeah.
And they broke a million with that and with Robot Chicken and Family Guy. And so they still get in pretty high numbers there. But for about 3 or 4 weeks there, I mean, it used to be like Family Guy and Robot Chicken were in the 1,900,000. And then it'd be the Saturday ones and it'd be like whatever those shows were back then. But whatever they are, they would be in the 500, 600, 300, they were pretty dismal at certain points, which is still, but still, if you think about that in terms of numbers of people, that's like a couple of stadiums filled with people that are actually supposed to be watching that on a Saturday night. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Saturday night's a shitty night. I don't watch it half the time. I tape it most of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I still have a life occasionally. but occasionally. So those 3 weeks that I did fill out this thing and sent it in, the ratings were up. They were like hell froze over, and the Saturday ratings were like dramatically higher.
Right, because what your votes personally told them that hundreds of thousands of other people were watching,
or that like
yeah.
you know,
thousands,
25,000 people were watching.
Exactly.
And I thought, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that the Nielsens are given to a small number of people. And it's weird.
And how often are they going to admit that they're like, yeah, I watched, 6 hours of
Grabbing Reality Show. Am I, that's another thing, too, is that, like embarrassment of...
That was the thing about Airplane. That
much higher ratings then.
That can lead us to stupid comedies. Airplane got really terrible audience review, when they did test audiences, because no one wanted to admit that they thought it was funny.
Right.
And so then when they released it and it did bazillions of dollars, it's like...
Which is weird because Kentucky Fried Movie actually, I think it was also group tested and it had
they do that with
decent reviews
now.
And it made decent money because it cost nothing to make.
Yeah.
So Airplane was just the three writers who also produced saying, we can just do this on our own. We don't need Landis to be involved. And I think Landis probably held them back because their pure comic vision is Airplane, is Naked Gun, the first one, and probably parts of the first Hot Shots, which mixes the they were really good at using these elderly actors in these ridiculous roles.
Yeah.
And Lloyd Bridges was fantastic in Airplane and...
Hot Shots.
Yeah, and I think he was also in the second Airplane 2, the space one.
He might have been. There was a lot of people in that one.
Yeah.
And Sonny Bono.
That movie was really bad, but there's a couple of hilarious moments. And one of the funniest moments, I think, in any stupid comedy I've ever seen is in that movie, even though it's...
This is Airplane 2?
Airplane 2, which is... The base on the moon, the guys are punching things, and they know that this shuttle's coming in and it's going to wreck. And so this guy goes up to this screen and punches these buttons, and the static fades out, and the person turns around, and it's James T. Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "What the hell do you want?" And they're like, "Oh, we've got a problem, sir. We need you to come in here." And he just opens the door. What it was, the screen,
I remember that.
And that
I
was
remember,
like, that was that a great hilarious. Gag. Like, they had great gags like that they put in. Like, and that's the thing, is that they knew that you could make... I mean, these movies are not meant to be... They're not meant to be literature or art. It's just
it's
a bunch
not,
of...
This is not your James L. Brooks. This is not your Wes Anderson comedy.
No. It's a bunch of gags thrown together, and they pray to the dear Lord above that it's going to work. And what's funny is that...
But you do have to be smart. You have to pay attention
totally.
To catch these gags. Like, some of them are subtler. They're not all just, like, a stupid pun that any old idiot's going
to
get.
And they tend to put them in...
An
like
unpretentious
so intelligentsia
will understand it, and that's the thing.
So tonight we watched Top Secret, which was Abrams and Zucker and Zucker's.
Probably the least known, probably for a reason.
It probably is their least. Well, I don't know, because it actually is. It's beloved, and if you look at like the IMDb ratings and stuff, very high ratings. Like people love it. It's just doesn't.
It's like the people that know about it.
Yeah, it never got a lot of play. I honestly had not heard about it until one day I was at work, and this guy was like, "You know what? You should see Top Secret." He's like, "I saw it years ago, and I know you like these movies." He's like, "You should check it out." And so I found, and it was like it was on sale suddenly on in DVD. So I just bought it, and I bought
it.
It's
the opposite of Super Trooper Karma for you, huh?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I meant to. Yeah, that's a sad story. I wanted to buy Super Troopers because Ian's only seen it on TV, bits and pieces of it, and I should own it because every time it's on anything, I watch it. And Super Troopers is definitely one of those movies. That's the thing, is that Top Secret doesn't follow any sort of specific parody thing, and you'll notice like
no, it really doesn't.
There was really not much that happened in that where I was thinking, oh, that's based on something.
It felt like if anything, maybe it was doing parody, and I don't know the date, but it almost could have been doing parody of like Scarecrow and Mrs. King, those like spy TV shows almost. Because
except for that,
it
the
felt
main
very
character.
Very quick in terms of the story. It was like an A-Team episode or something. It's
except
like,
for that, the main character is a 1950s looking. Beach Boys singing pop star.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing to put in any story. I mean, it's supposed to be like, that's
East
the thing. With
Germany.
A name like that, you'd think it was some sort of spy film, and it's not.
You know?
Like, it's like an East Germany, like Nazi communism.
The title is
like,
really misleading. I thought in my head that it was going to be a Val Kilmer's a smart-ass college student, and then the CIA needs to bring him in, and then
that's the thing.
Hijinks ensue.
He plays that straight man who is so deadpan that, like, It then becomes funny. That's the thing, is one thing, like, people hear the term straight man and deadpan, and they think that that's, like, the boring character.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is, But for the most part, in a good comedy, the straight man will end up being just as funny because
they're
almost like they're the ones who are more oblivious to everything. The people who overreact to stuff are the wacky ones.
Yeah.
And the person who's completely oblivious to even the most obvious things are the straight man, the deadpan one. So
that's true.
That's what makes Frank Drebin funny. That's what makes Lloyd Bridges funny in Hot Shots and Airplane.
Lloyd Bridges is kind of just ridiculous. I mean, that part where he's like running that that cloth, that rag through his ears.
Yeah, and he talks about how his and he keeps mentioning which body parts of his are made of porcelain and tin, and how he lost this in Saigon and he lost this here, and there's just weird, like, they have little like dialogue jokes in that really work well. He's talking to a guy about going to his house for dinner. It's I totally forget the guy's name. He's the guy who, his name is Block. He's Lieutenant Block in that movie. He's like their commander, and he's the one who's been selling information, or he's the one who's been sabotaging the planes so that the plane manufacturers can, that guy, you know what I'm talking about. And he's talking about going to dinner at his house, and he says, yes, dinner. He says, I love soup, or is it duck? Which is the one that flies? And he says, duck, sir, and he's ducks, he thinks he's selling a duck, and he slams his head on the table. And it's just it's really dumb, but it the way it's played, it just comes up funny. And for some reason,
it's like old vaudeville stuff.
It is.
And I could tell you a story that happened to me for real. Yesterday, I was, or a couple days ago, I was talking to my friend on the web, and I was seeing that people write, and another one of those NetSpeak things, those shorthands, IIRC.
IRC. You don't even have to have the I just in front of it, but IRC is something that's commonly used in
that space. And he tells me, I'm chatting with him, you know, and usually how those net conversations go, it's like you're two steps behind, then you're one step ahead, and you're two, you know, because it's like somebody says something
you're responding to something five frames
back. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so he says, if I remember correctly. And then he never got back to me, and I was like, dude, you didn't, today I was like, you didn't tell me what it was. Yeah. And he's like, it was, if I remember correctly. And I'm like, oh, that was kind of a who's on first kind of thing.
Okay, so it actually was IIRC. Okay, because IRC is an internet relay chat, and that's used a lot by people who get on certain sites like 4chan and all these things that are used for the people to just basically go on, it's like message boards that people are constantly on, and they're basically like giving each other like really nasty porn, and then at the same time they're ripping on each other and they're making
it sounds these, like it's a total
it ends up being very
a marketplace actually, for human depravity, huh?
It is, and it's and these they're like the worst kind of people, but at the same time the stuff they come up with is absolutely hilarious. Like they are some of the things I've read on like encyclopediadramatica.com it basically is like it's a Wikipedia that's just full of all the entries are about this internet stuff and about all the what they call drama that surrounds it and all the lulls, which is LULZ, which is a corruption of lol, LOL, which is what they call it, a corruption of lol. And it's like basically that is
all the stupid little kids say that all the time now.
Right, but it's this has grown beyond that. This is like an abomination, and they think it's hilarious because you get these things by ruining people's lives and causing them to have great stress and
who's,
trauma.
People whose actual lives are getting ruined because of the
people
internet.
Who live on the internet.
Oh.
People who's in, for who the internet is their life will
but
have
then
their
aren't
lives
they, aren't
ruined
they, aren't they like,
by
like
people trolling them.
So well versed in the whole process.
No. If you really look at it.
Well, I live in the real world. You live in the real world. And so we're susceptible to having our lives ruined in the real world. But we're also susceptible to being
IRL.
Able to be able to defend ourselves in the real world and to be able to, like, handle
they do
that.
Defend themselves. They swear at each other and say, oh, if we kill you, I'm going to hunt you down and slit your throat and all this stuff. And
over
they,
what now?
Because they...
You call
stuff.
Somebody names?
No, it's not just that. It's
like they like hack people's bank accounts and shit.
No, they'll take like if you put a picture of yourself on there or a picture of someone you say is your girlfriend.
Why would you do that?
They're gonna take the picture and they're gonna take their face and they're gonna put it on some porn and then they're gonna put it back on the internet and say it's you and they're gonna use your name and they're gonna hack in and find where you live and all this stuff and they just do it because it's
if you're
funny.
Part of their
it
system.
Is funny. It's very evil and it's funny.
Yeah, but if you're part of their system, fine. I mean, there's nothing I have about myself on the internet that I don't already consider a joke. And I would never post anything sincere on the internet.
You're
better. Who would? I'm not saying I'm better. I'm just saying.
Well, you are, though.
At least I'm smart enough. And you'd think people that live on the internet would know that. I mean, it's the way I feel about it is the same way I feel about abortion. It's like, well, if this is the world you want, go with it. You know, let's get out the shop vac and turn on the Christmas music.
that's rough.
There you go.
They can't do that movies anymore. Like, it just doesn't happen. Look what's happened with this recent thing. With the stupid movies now are honestly...
They're just a Family Guy episode.
No, it's not even that. But, did you watch Epic Movie?
Reference to old
Did you
stuff.
Watch Epic Movie?
No.
It's not references. It's not jokes about it. It's shot-for-shot remakes. That's supposed to be funny. That's what they do. There's...
Okay, no, because South Park did it, but they recontextualized it. South Park did the cripple fight, and it was like a shot-for-shot of They Live,
that's fine.
Right?
That's fine. But what they do in these movies, like the Date Movie and Epic Movie, were they took like somebody who looked kind of like a character,
mm-hmm.
and then they just had them say something that they said in the movie. And then you're like the audience is presumably, they're supposed to go, oh, I saw that one, I remember that movie.
But
like Hitch
there's
or
no
something like
joke
that.
To it, Mike?
No, there's no joke to it. They just say a line from it. And then like... There's what could be called kind of jokes. Because
I've seen
it,
that one, Not Another Teen one, and there's jokes in that one, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Randy
that's
Quaid
before
is
this
goes,
whole thing.
Okay.
This whole thing. This all spun off from the fact that usually these movies, since it's just a string of gags, are written by multiple people.
Yeah.
Top Secret was a minimum, and there was four of them.
There was four writers and three directors.
Abrams, and Zucker. Well, Abrams, Zucker, and Zucker co-directed a lot of their early stuff together until then just Zucker started directing. And then one of the other Zuckers, I think it was Jerry, directed Ghost, which is really weird.
Yeah, well, we've got to do one of those every now and again.
And then
Mel Brooks producing Elephant
Abrams
Man.
Abrams directed Naked Gun 33 and a third, which was really bad, just on his own, and the other Zuckers were involved. And then the other Zucker, which was the one who really did probably most of the comedy directing in the first three, he's the one who recontinued to do...
The
Scary Movies after the Wayans got off the directing.
They were too good for it.
They were. They had graduated beyond. And I liked the first. I liked the first
chicks,
Scary
huh?
Movie, and I thought the second one was funny the first time I saw it. There were a couple of decent jokes.
Is that
on
the
it.
One with David Cross?
Yeah. It's really not that funny the more I watch it, but
he's
a
disabled.
Cripple. Yeah.
He's like, I can do it myself.
Yeah. And then he sucks his own dick. Very funny. Yeah. And theirs was just super gross out humor in place of actual gags and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, but then what happened was, even those had multiple writers on them. There was Sean and Marlon had written the first two, plus a couple other people. And then the third one was like five people. And the third one was still somewhat successful. And that one was directed by Zucker, the non-ghost directing Zucker.
Yeah.
And then the fourth one was directed by a few of the ones from three, or written by a few of the ones from three, and directed by
one?
One of those, yeah. And that one had even more writers.
Oh, that was
like
the one that had,
them.
Like, Dr. Phil and Shaq and the Saw parody, right?
And there was, like, six writers in that one. So then two of the six writers went and wrote along with four other writers, and then they co-directed Date Movie. So what's happening is it's like a constant thinning down.
It's a cascading effect.
It is.
It's like when I plug in too many mics to my computer and
the
audio turns to crap.
But for some reason, the audio is not completely, like, you can hear two of us at a time, and then just not
you. I think it's because I was using the crappier, I don't know.
I don't know.
I put less priority to myself if I have guests.
So out of anything you would categorize as a stupid movie, which is your kind of favorite?
Oh,
and it can't. It doesn't have to be just this parody thing, because
well, I'll try
a lot
to
of them
name some, and then
bit.
You can help
okay.
clarify. If
Dumb and Dumber is a stupid movie.
Okay,
Wet
like
Hot American Summer is a stupid movie.
Okay. Yeah, my I asked my friend about this before I showed up, and he said a lot of those sketch comedy ones that are usually really awful. But then we immediately named like four that we thought were good, like Martin and Orloff. The UCB movie was pretty funny because it had H. John Benjamin. Mm-hmm.
You like the Brain Candy one?
Brain Candy was good. I mean, come on, Brain Candy. The best part in Brain Candy.
Brain Candy had a couple of funny parts I liked. For the most part, I
thought
it was a little
well,
too dry.
A lot of them are like that though. But like the part where Bruce McCullough's doing that jerk off, and the guy walks in and he's like, you're not a plate of croissants. And everyone's like, oh, Cisco. I was just like, that's hilarious. Because that was before douchebaggery was so replete that it's almost like we're sick of it. it's not funny anymore. Come on, everybody. You know, doing that to be ironic isn't funny anymore.
Right.
Gosh, I don't know. Pound for pound, I think Airplane might be my favorite, because Airplane, I can actually, there's still some tension in it at certain points, and you still kind of care about the characters, and it's just funny almost all the way through. And it's got a lot of different A and B stories. I mean, it's got all the things I like in a good movie. It's got, you know, some excitement, some tension. You care about some of the characters, and there's more than one story, so that there's multiple things going on. I mean, that movie was made in '80. That was before I was even born. And so many of those references I didn't even get. But, like, when I first saw it, like, with my parents and stuff, and they got the references, and then they said something about it, I was like, oh, well, now I do get the references after, you know, like, having some cultural literacy, being older now. So I'd say Airplane's probably my favorite of those kinds of movies. Hot Shots was good. What else? Wet Hot American Summer, I really did enjoy. The thing is that some of those movies, they're like 5 really funny parts, and then the rest is just kind of like, you're sitting. It's like Mystery Science Theater sometimes. Like, you sit through it, and it's like, oh, man, they'll have some really, really funny moments. And some of them are solid, like Hobgoblins. That's pretty solid. That's got, like, 5 to 10 seriously funny parts in it. You know, like, when the Hobgoblin's sitting there waiting to use the phone, and it's like, oh, I need to use the phone. You think maybe I... Or when the old guy shoots the guy, and he's like, I shot you instead. Is that okay?
Right.
And then the rake fight that goes on for, like, 8 minutes. And then they're Club Scum and all that. But some of them, like, I saw one about this thing called side hacking, and it was these guys, it's like where guys hang off the side of a sidecar motorcycle.
Side hackers.
Yeah.
Side hackers. I have that if you want to watch it.
And we couldn't even finish it because it was just like, the whole thing was an ad for that. And I kind of want to know how it ends now, because they were going to meet at the beach and fight. They were going to, like, side hack battle. But like, Wet Hot American Summer kind of felt that way a little bit in certain places. But then it ended up,
it really did. You know,
Top Secret was even that way in some spots, where it's kind of like, you're kind of, because Top Secret had a couple musical numbers, but they weren't, some of them were good, but some of them were just kind of like,
great. What's interesting is that there's a couple of weird moments, like non sequitur type things that get thrown into the one. I don't know if you notice that. I laugh at it every time, even though it really has nothing to do with it. But when he's on the stage singing, and the part where he sings 2 songs in a row, and the second one's the sadder song, and when it starts, first of all, you've been hearing all the screaming happen over and over. Screaming, and it shows all the girls going crazy, like Beatles style.
Exactly.
And then when the slow song starts, they cut all the audio from the screaming, but it cuts to this close-up of this one girl's face, and she slowly goes, and then screams. That would be crazy loud, but they completely drop you out of it, and it's just like a really funny-looking image to me.
But the kind of stuff that really gets to me, that really puts me on the floor, is very often, I can almost not even, like, tell you specifically. Like, I can tell you that my favorite joke in the 40-Year-Old Virgin is the joke about when Seth Rogen looks at his toy collection and says, is that the $6 million man's boss?
Right.
There's something, like, there's got to be something deconstructive and something, like, within, like, a subculturally, like, specific and esoteric element to it in order for me to really think it's funny, I guess. Which sounds really hoity-toity, but all I'm saying is that, and the reason
love Judd Apatow, then, because all it is references to stuff that most people wouldn't get.
I know. Well, I do love a lot of that stuff. I enjoyed Freaks and Geeks and the Ben Stiller Show and all those kinds of things.
My favorite line from Knocked Up is, which I've told you many times, is the one where he says that...
Well, I still haven't seen it, so I couldn't tell you.
But, oh, I know, Knocked Up, 4-Year-Old Version.
Yeah, it's the Jack Palance.
The Jack Palance thing. My grandma looks like Jack Palance. And, like, that's, things like that where you
those,
just...
Well, those, all Knocked the Seth Rogen stuff was really
of those,
funny.
And then Superbad has some hilarious ones like that, because the people who are saying some of those lines in this are supposed to be 18-year-old kids, 17-year-old kids.
And it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, no, but it's funny because, like, they are the type of person who would know,
the Monty Python one.
Yeah, exactly. And automatically, it makes them, like, the smartest people in the film.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So it kind of makes that a place. It's almost like they're a real-world extension without the style of a Wes Anderson film, because
these
people are all smart enough. Like, they're all the smartest people in the room always. But that doesn't help them at all.
No, it never does.
it doesn't help.
It's like, you got to teach me that part. But like my favorite joke in Futurama is the Admiral Crunch joke.
Nah.
When he's talking about how all this stuff's changed, nah, I couldn't believe all these things would have changed. And it's just a background joke.
Yeah.
Now they went back to the well right after that, and I always forget that part. They didn't do the Archduke Chocula thing, like for the stupid people that didn't notice.
Yeah.
But it's like it put me on the floor. The idea that it took 1,000 years for Captain Crunch to get a promotion, because I had in my mind vaguely thought about that. I'd actually thought, well, you know, if he's a captain, is he like captain of a Navy? I mean, is he ever going to become more than, does he want to be? Is it like a Captain Kirk kind of thing? And he wants to just, no, I just want my own vessel and my own, I don't, just paperwork and administration. That's my Captain Crunch impression.
Which sounded like Sean Connery as usual.
Oh, God damn it.
My
favorite Mission Hill joke is another signage joke where Jim's sitting there talking about like, we always have party time, you know, whatever. And he's like eating from like a party time sized bag of chips. It's just like it says what he's saying.
Right.
I don't know, like my favorite episode of Aqua Teen Hunger Force is the Happy Time Harry one with David Cross, because that one is so...
Commenced to jiggling.
No, but it's just so genius the way that the Happy Time Harry character is so representative of someone that's just committed to being a downer.
Right.
Like, you know, like, I don't really know, I was passed out, you know, this wasn't my fault, I'm not supposed to drink, but I do, you know? You had tequila the whole time,
yeah.
Just like... Everything he says is just like what a downer, bummer, like dirtbag would be like, and then how it actually psychologically affects the child Meatwad, and he's able to become more assertive because of that kind of like real world depression that comes with it, and he takes himself off the list for having his organs donated. It just gets me every time. It's just,
right.
It's, I don't know.
Speaking about Aqua Teen. There's a lot of really funny moments in some of them that I've seen where, for instance, that they keep bringing characters that have no place in any cartoon, much less theirs, which is like Andrew W.K. and like,
yeah. Danzig.
Yeah, Danzig and what's his name? The ex...
Zach Wilde?
Yeah, Zach Wilde, yeah. And
for Spirit Journey Formation?
It's weird that, like, you know, a certain type of humor defines each different show.
Yeah.
And... there's things about Aqua Teen that I find absolutely hilarious, but for the overall, I don't ever find myself thinking, oh, a new Aqua Teen's on, I gotta watch it. I never do that, because like they're always so
I'm
not compelled to watch it. But the best examples of that show's humor are absolutely fantastic, and my favorite one is the one about the Brood Witch. It's because like. And I really like the Dix one too. That was the newer one. Yeah, and it was because it was so horrible with it. And the voices, the falsetto voices of the little.
You don't think they're dicking around. My brother and I were on the floor.
We made that joke to each other
for 2 weeks straight or something. But what about the Brood Witch?
Thing about the Brood Witch was that it was just so fast, and each thing it jumped to had absolutely nothing to do with anything else in the show, and it was just like. Like, how high were they when they wrote this stuff? Seriously, like.
But then you see those guys that write it, and you know they're not the kind of guys
that get high. No, they're not.
They might kick back a couple brews.
Yeah, they're just a couple of dudes, you know?
You know?
Like, oh, gosh, I don't know, because...
They
keep kind of like, you know...
They get into the 2D animation.
Shape will not stop eating the stupid thing. And every time he goes back, this thing is trying to kill him. And then
the guy's an axe.
He goes back and sneakily... The guy's standing there leaning on his axe, talking about his girlfriend. Yeah, his wife. Yeah,
and
how
you got
she
a
wants
kid.
To redecorate.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want it to happen.
With the backlight through the brains.
And they're talking for like a long time. And the whole time, Shake's just watching them
eating more.
He just keeps eating more and more.
He's like, "What's with the toilet?"
And he didn't eat the whole thing because he doesn't like tomatoes. And then
sun-dried tomatoes.
Yeah, that's right. And he's like, "Come on, there's sun-dried tomatoes.
It can't be taken off." Or how about how it's got like he. They lay out everything that it's got on it.
Yeah.
And only Shake would be this, like, much of a, like, total, like, disgusting guy. And he's like, what, no bacon? I'll say this. Bacon aside, this is the best damn sandwich. And that's one of the first few ones when Meatwad starts. I think they realized at a certain point that it was better if Meatwad was actually smart enough to trick Shake every now and again. Because then he goes back.
Shake's the dumbest one. He comes back
and he's like, do you see that guy with the axe? He tried to kill you? He's like, oh, you mean Gary? Oh, he's all right. It took me to Merry Christmas, you know, XXX, the strip club down. And then Shake eats a bite and takes off. And then Frylock's like, really, it was great. He's like, hell no, that boy had an axe.
You know what's funny is that you can tell, like, you know that Dana Snyder is writing a lot of his lines for all the shows.
Oh, he's like improvising a decent bit. Well, I listen to the podcast that he does.
If you watch Minority, it's the same sort of riffing. It's the same thing. And, like, you can just tell, like, this is his humor. Because I've seen, like, interviews with him and stuff, and he'll just go off on things like that.
Oh, I've listened to a podcast. They've only done 29 episodes of him and Ken Plume over at Kevin Smith's Quick Stop website. Do the Ken PD Snyder Snidecast or whatever. And some of them are pretty funny. Though, for some reason, Plume feels the need to overlay every episode with, like, kind of elevator-ish esoteric music, and they keep it on almost the whole time, and it's a little distracting. It's not like it's too loud, it's just that it's, like, a little bit distracting.
Right.
But usually it's just him, like, Snyder being really obnoxious and Plume defending himself. Yeah, the Broodwich one is great. I think what my favorite part in the Broodwich one ends up being the part later, towards the end, when they think everything's all done, and Meat Wad keeps going, like, so is that the end of that? Jake's like, I don't know. He's like, you think he's gone? He's like, I don't know. He's a voice. And Meat Wad's like, so do you think everything's... He's like, I don't know. He just yells at him. And it's like, oh, that's funny.
That's the thing, is that, like, you know, my favorite show on Adult Swim of all time is still C-Lab. I know a lot of people don't find it as funny as I do. And they went off.
A lot of people were like, after season two, you know.
Right, no,
like,
but the thing is, later on, it really got, it got really to, like, Aqua Teen levels of, like, things not having anything to do with each other. And that became really great with the characters, because they were all, like, Frank Drebin-ish, really. Like, they were all like that. And they had this stupid thing where they would all be so diehard with what they wanted. Like, for instance, the one where... And they revisited eventually.
Yeah,
I was watching. They started reshowing them again the other day, and there was one from the first season where
I have them on DVD. If you ever want to borrow them, all four seasons.
I've seen. I might want to do that again. Actually, I've seen them all a few times. I've actually rented them all a few times and watched them a few times too. But they, the one where they're talking about there's a nuclear melt, and so Dr. Quinn's out there trying to fix the pods, but at the same time, all of them are inside, and he keeps turning off the alarm so they can talk about. Their robot bodies that they're going to put their brains into. And that was the first one. Then a couple seasons later, they revisited it, and what's his name? The captain. You
know? Captain Murphy?
Murphy, actually. He actually becomes a Barbobot, which is what you've been talking about the whole time, with huge knockers that are like torpedoes, lasers, whatever.
Yeah.
And then...
and the chainsaw arms.
And and what's his name? Sparks. The head thing is put on that he claims that they're being called Sparkamus Prime, and he's like, no, we're a Barbobot. He's like, Sparkamus Prime. Like, they're like, and for some reason, like, why couldn't he get his own robot body?
Exactly.
Why does he have to attach to that? And oh my gosh! And then in that first one, it always killed me that Eric Estrada was the voice.
Oh yeah.
For some reason, and he was like, he kept talking about how his gorilla bot would have the strength of
he'd be like.
It was the strength of 10 men or something like that.
Something like that.
And he kept pointing it out. He was like, you don't understand. It would be the strength of 10 men. And he's like really excited about it.
Did you see the one where they're all doped up and then he's hanging from the ceiling? He's like, I feel like a bear with the strength of 2 bears.
And my absolute favorite about that whole series was the one where when they started going crazy with the Grizzlebees commercials, nutty. And so,
dude, they only did that twice, the Tin Fin one, but then did you see the other one where they revisited it, and it was just all this awful stuff that was like really sexual, but you didn't get it, and then all of a sudden you did, and you're just like, this is terrible.
And
she's like, you monster!
Well, they had that, like, for instance, they had the commercial for the Grizzlebees, which was the Shocker, which was like the potato, like, wedges that are like in the shape of the Shocker finger thing that was like on top of a mound of... of like guacamole or something like that. It's like the Shocker, take your girlfriend, and you know, like,
oh my god, so, or there was like the one that was like the bread with the hot dog, but it was like all yeasty.
But my favorite one, terrible. The favorite one was the one where it starts with something that escalates, and somebody says something to Debbie. And then and then the music starts, and someone goes, like, they say either oh snap or oh no or something like that. You remember what I'm talking about? Then the music just goes, that was it. And the music just goes, bzz, 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 bzz. And it goes like that for the entire rest of the 10 minutes of the show.
Yeah.
And then it just keeps going to more scenarios where someone has to say, uh-oh, for something.
It just keeps breaking through and cycling back around.
And then it goes all the way back around with, like, 2 minutes to spare. Mm-hmm. And the person stands there and, like, waits for it all to end. And then they say something again. And like, the same sort of faux pas happens. And they go, uh-oh. And then it starts over again. Like, it ends with, like a spaceship crashing into Earth. And, like, I watched it for the first time after I had just watched like four other ones in a row, and I was like already delirious with sleep, and like when a show suddenly was able to change its style a bunch of times and like give you different versions of their show, like this is what the show would be like if it was written by the Aqua Teen guys or something like that, you know, like.
No, C-Lab was fun. I was really sad when it left.
So here's the thing that I was going to say, was that if you go back and rewatch something that you have super fond memories of, like Airplane.
I own it on DVD. Okay. I think
when's the last time you watched it?
Years ago, I'm guessing. You know, I bet I've seen pieces of it on TV. Last time
you sat down and watched the whole thing. I guarantee you the next time you sit down and watch it, you will be disappointed.
I'm sure I will be in some
places. Here's the thing. The reason why this is my favorite type of movie is because I grew up watching Disney movies.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You got the interesting background.
I love that stuff. No, it's not interesting.
This is why you like the violence, too, huh?
I don't know.
It was a forbidden fruit, and now you just like it.
No, it's not just that. I like...
there was some good violence in The Last Blood Plus.
I'm not a big fan of the super realistic violence. I like the stupid cartoony fake violence.
Oh, yeah, that was good stuff in The Last Blood Plus. Too bad you didn't keep the faith on it, huh? No, seriously, dude. It was like as I was watching, I was like, "This is what Zach would like." But yeah, you'd have to sit through 20 episodes to get to it.
Amanda Asante got him. Good job, Asante.
Rico.
What a terrible movie. Okay, that's one of those movies that's not even fun to watch, really.
Judge Dredd.
Yeah, it's not even fun to watch.
Dude, Seth and I made it like a third of the way through it just recently.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, I know. We got a little gold stars. Actually, they were silver stars for a third of the way.
They should be bronze stars for a third of the way. Silver stars would be two-thirds. And if you make it all the way through the extended features and the DVD, a platinum star.
Definitely. Which looks a lot like a silver star.
It does look a lot like, but it's kind of a darker gray, I think. Less sheen to it. Not as chromey.
Which is ironic. It's less shiny.
Yeah. So why is it like...
Less sparkle.
Yeah.
If you see the South Park,
if you went just by sparkle, then you would get that pyrite and various other...
Indeed.
Things would be more valuable. Rhinestone is very...
You know what I'm glad lost popularity real quick? Chicks putting, like, glitter on their faces. How fucking stupid was that?
Well, I was watching some music awards the other day. And,
the Country Music Awards? That's what you were watching when I came over last
week. Yeah, but Avril Lavigne was there, so it couldn't have been those. It was some of
those. It's possible. It's all
and
worlds
she was
colliding.
Covered in glitter, so I don't know if it's really gone by the wayside. Someone's trying to bring it back. Vera Wang, I don't know. I don't think she throws glitter on people once they put her dresses on. But
well, she just makes wedding dresses.
She's like, no, she makes other dresses, too. What if, I mean, that would be funny, though, if you imagine that, like, she's like, I've got a special surprise for you once you put that dress on. Oh, it looks perfect.
Boom!
By the way, you're just covered in glitter. And they're like,
it's in my eyes. It's in my ears.
Okay,
nose.
So if you go back and watch any of these things, I got to an age of like 10, 11, 12, 13 in that era, and I started watching like with my neighbor. He was like, you've never seen The Holy Grail. You got to come over and watch it. So I watched The Holy Grail. I watched Airplane. I watched Naked Gun. And they all had me absolutely on the floor, absolutely 100% on the floor. I literally was off my chair, like on the ground, painfully laughing.
Good times.
And then like some of those movies that I absolutely loved, I will go back and realize that I was stupider back then, and that's why I thought a lot of those things were funny.
Some of that stuff is, I don't know, like Leslie Nielsen is like, I know I had lasagna.
No,
that's still funny.
Yeah, no, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, a third of the jokes aren't funny anymore.
Yeah.
And so there's still things. And the thing you have to realize is...
A lot of
it's
watching, really the mood you're in, though.
You're
like
watching...
Smoking or non-smoking, you'll laugh or you won't laugh, depending on if you're pissed off and you want to be mad, then you're going to not enjoy that joke. You're just going to be like, stupid pun. Yeah, I get
it.
Okay.
All right.
That's my take on some of that. I think a lot of these kinds of
you're
movies...
not letting me finish, damn it.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is, when people say that about the new ones, Super Troopers, What Hot American Summer...
Yeah.
What they're forgetting is they watched those movies a long time ago, and every single year that passes when you see something that you saw something you liked, every single year that passes where you haven't seen it again is a year where it gets better in your mind. That's honestly the truth with any movie.
That's true for any movie, yeah.
It's absolutely true with any movie. So what people are forgetting is when you watch Super Troopers and only half of the jokes, literally half of the jokes in the movie are funny, but a lot of them fall flat. But the ones that succeed are absolutely hilarious, and they're totally worth it.
It kind of works both ways, though, because, like, I'll wait to watch something so that way it's not as fresh in my mind, and then I will actually forget little bits of things here and there. And then when I see it again, I'll be like, oh, that's right,
no,
that
no, it's true,
and,
that's true. But you know, also,
like an
other
awesome
things,
scene in a movie.
No,
or like
it's
a
true.
Joke.
It does work both ways, but at the same time, like, you will understand things you didn't get before, but overpowering that generally is the sense that you don't find things as funny, and it's disappointing. It's a little bit kind of, like, disheartening when I do it. It doesn't happen with Monty Python films.
Weird.
Like, when I watch those, I appreciate them more. I didn't like Life of Brian the first couple times I saw it.
I've never seen that one. The first one I think I saw was Meaning of Life, and this is my comedy. I think I like Meaning of Life better than Grey.
Meaning of Life has always been one of my favorites because it combined, like I was talking about with Young Frankenstein.
I just really like the Terry Gilliam opening with the savings and loan piracy.
Yeah, and that was actually meant to be just a small segment of it, but he went so over budget and over time with it, they just put it on as a short in the beginning, which they had to beg the studio to let them do because they didn't want them to do it.
Yeah.
Because you've already lost the interest of half the people who are watching at that point because it's really long and boring.
It's so fantastic,
okay,
though.
To you. But it's really long and boring in reality. I like it, but in reality, it is long and boring.
Is it really that long?
It's 20 minutes.
Maybe.
For a short.
It seems like it's like 2 minutes of dismalness, and then they get on, and it's
no, shit. And then there's like 8 minutes of soaring musicals as it slowly rolls toward the edge of the earth and falls over. Seriously.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I should probably watch it again. I probably wouldn't like it as
and
much.
And Gilliam's visuals...
I love his visuals.
Really bother me at times.
I don't know.
Really
I almost always really dig his
stuff. I used to be the biggest Cary Gilliam fan, and then about the third time I watched 12 Monkeys, I was like, why the Dutch angles?
Okay, well, yeah, 12 Monkeys,
much.
I don't like that.
I love 12 Monkeys.
But, like, Brazil, and I've only seen Brazil once. I kind of save it. I should watch it again some rainy Friday night after Blade Runner.
Brazil's got some great stuff in it. It's got some great stuff in it. One thing I don't like, though, is that from that area, the era of the Meaning of Life in Brazil, and that time in the 80s where he was doing like Time Minutes and stuff, he's got this. There's constantly this like dust and fog and graininess to it that really makes it disorienting during everything. And
you mean like you mean in the mise en scène within the scene, or you mean like the actual visual,
the
like,
actual visuals,
the quality,
the actual
of the
visuals.
Image.
If you watch Baron Munchausen, it's prominent through the whole thing.
Really,
it's really prominent through all that stuff, and it's kind of disorienting.
Baron Munchausen is another one that I really like to like, but then there's that whole part on the moon with Robin Williams that just puts me, like, I just have to skip that part. Because so much of it's lame. But I really love that movie and certain parts. I mean, I just love Airships and da, 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 da. I figure Airplane, I got it on DVD. Next time I'm probably going to watch it is when like a couple of my friends, like Johnny and stuff, are hanging out up in my apartment after a poker game or something. And it's just like we watched Aliens just a couple months ago.
Aliens?
Aliens.
Okay,
I was
you can't
like,
watch Alien with a group of guys.
Oh, no. Aliens, for sure. Yeah. And we just laughing like at the Hicks and, you know. And
right. Did you watch Beer Fest?
No, okay. You told me a little bit.
So Beer Fest is the first time I saw it in the theater. There were three or four really funny moments in that movie that made me feel when I walked out of it that it was worth it. And then I watched it again, and it was almost not funny at all except for those three or four moments. Mm-hmm. And then I watched it a third time after a fantasy football draft here, and a bunch of guys wanted to leave, but I was switching through the channels, and they saw that it was on, and it was just starting, so everyone stayed. And they're all a bunch of, like, punk or metal, like, guys, they're all in their 30s and stuff now, so they're all past their...
They're all, like, Bad Religion shirts and stuff.
Well, they don't wear the shirts. I mean, that's the thing, is that, like, guys who are... Here's the thing about life, Ian.
Okay.
That you need to know.
Among
people
other
who
things.
Wear shirts of a band...
They're that guy.
They're not just that guy. They're the guy who was never in the band.
Okay, so you're talking about Beer Fest and punker
guys.
Yeah,
so these guys... and I was thinking, like, for some reason, I was... I mean, here's the thing, is I'm a cinephile, I'll admit it. You know, most of my life has been really based around movies, and it's what I would ideally like to get into.
It's why we do a podcast about it.
Yeah.
Because that's what we like to do.
But at a certain point, I start to assume that if I didn't like something that other friends of mine won't, also.
That's a tough one.
And it doesn't happen that way. And I was sitting here with Beer Fest, and I realized that, and I know this is a truth that I've known for a long time, but it came to like a perfect realization and dawned on me. If you watch something that's not that great with people who find it great, it's elevated. It becomes better.
If you
watch some crap in theater with a bunch of howling people who love it, you'll be like, yeah, that was a good experience. It was good entertainment.
Definitely.
I usually drown
good
that
test,
out.
A good test of a real funny comedy is just watching it on your own, you know?
Is that Jan Michael Vincent?
Yes.
Yes. What is this?
Oh, this is fantastic.
Right? Okay, I got to see.
Oh, look at this guy. Dude, they got like a cyborg guy, too, and he's got like eyeshadow on. Dude, you know who that looks like? That looks like, it looks like Peter Paul. Alienator from 1989. Dan Michael Vincent's beating up this guy. He looks like Patrick Swayze in that movie that had Bull in it, where Bull was chasing Patrick Swayze in like the Badlands, and it was really badly green screened. Do you remember that one? Bull from Night Court was like the bad guy, and Patrick Swayze, I think Patrick Swayze was in it. Might have been Patrick Swayze's brother Don. Yeah, Richard Mull.
This guy's face is getting eaten by leeches.
Oh my god, they're digging into it, like all Star Trek II style.
This guy's going nutty.
Oh my gosh.
This Jan Michael Vincent movie is off
the hook. Action Network is just, it's bringing it every day.
It is, man. They've always got some crap to watch on here.
You know what? I wonder how many of those like old like refineries and steel mills or whatever they just keep around just for using that. Hey, is that one guy from Day of the Dead?
You wish. Remember
the captain?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and he was always like talking like this. He's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna do that, scientist."
Gosh, I'm not gonna say. What was that show? The helicopter show he was in.
Airwolf.
Okay. You just like.
I took a pause.
You took a meaningful
pause.
You crossed
your
arms and you leaned on your elbows, and the whole time you were making this
really
annoying,
smarmy, like
It's the mustache, man.
I forget I have the mustache.
You've
I'm
got
acting
this
normally.
Dirtbag Fu Manchu, and it's turning you into a different person,
it's
awesome. One of these days, you're going to do that to a woman, and she's just going to melt.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's just the kind of relationship I want. Now, okay, Sam and I...
You shouldn't be beggars can't be choosers, man.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just kidding.
Sam and I had the roughest time remembering the third weapon in Airwolf, because Sam was like, okay, so it was chain guns, and it was hellfire, and then what was the third one?
Sam who?
Sam Glidden.
Sam Glidden doesn't watch TV.
Sam Glidden and I had conversations about what was the third weapon in Airwolf. Neither one of us could remember.
He doesn't even read novels. He reads nonfiction.
Well, Sam Glidden
books.
Is a much better person now than he used to be. He was corrupted by people like us. You know, he's a better man. He grew up. We didn't. What are you going to do? It happens. He's actually younger than us, too. But
way younger. He's like three.
Holla to you, Sam. But, oh my gosh, it's over.
No, dude, it's just starting. It's the opening credits, like 20 minutes after it started. This is The Fugitive.
It's got a guy named Fox Harris in it.
This is The Fugitive. The first act just happened, and here's the credits.
Tegan.
As the Alienator. Just Tegan?
Tegan? Is that like a porn star?
I hope so.
Okay. Anyway, so the third one, I was watching it and a rerun of it years ago with one of my housemates down in Riverside. It was like just your chaff, you know, stuff that's just like chunks of shit you let out to disperse to prevent other.
Look it up.
It's defensive. Well, yeah, but you couldn't back then. There was no Wikipedia to look
this
stuff up.
Oh, you're talking about this a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Well, next time you see Sam.
Yeah, Sam knows now. I think I told him or something. I think one of the few times I was able to chat with him, I said something like that, and he was like, oh, great.
Helicopter. There's a main article just for the helicopter in
Of course there is. Are you kidding me? It's Wikipedia. They got more information about Transformers than they do about World War II.
Yeah. Okay, here we go.
The three primary weapons.
Chain gun is a registered trademark of McDonnell Douglas, and they were not to be referred to as such again. So they can no longer call them the chain guns after the first season.
Give me chain guns, Dom. Give me Hellfire, Dom. Dom was played by... Academy Award winner Ernest Borgnine.
Uh-huh.
From Marnie.
Turbo boost. Let's see. Machine guns. They rip apart tanks and bunkers. The belly missile pod can fire a variety of rockets, including air-to-surface Mavericks, Hellfire, and heat-seeking Sidewinders. It was also equipped with an advanced computer system which can identify and track aircraft.
Do you remember the Highwaymen one where it was like the guy drove the giant big rig, but it also turned into a helicopter?
I
don't remember the show
at all. I watched it in my uncle's bedroom, I think. When he was not in the room, I would go in there and play around on his computer and watch Airwolf. I was super young, man. I don't even know.
Banter.
What have we learned about stupid comedies tonight, do you think?
We've learned that they're not always as fun after as the nostalgia of them. We've learned that a lot of it has to do with audience. I think if you watch a movie that you really enjoy, the first time you watched it was with a bunch of people, you probably had and you had a good time. A lot of it probably had to do with the nostalgia of being with the people too.
One thing that is great about them is that never at one point should you ever be watching one thinking about it with high expectations.
Oh,
even
no.
If you've seen it many times, you know what you're going to get from a movie like this, and they always, not always, but they will many times end up surprising you positively, and you'll go away thinking that you just, I mean, here's the thing about movies is that, are they in a space Winnebago? What is this?
Oh my golly.
They're seriously in a space Winnebago.
Well, they're not.
Oh, okay, no. They're in a regular
Winnebago. They're in the land of the lost, dude. The crack's going to come up here in a second.
This movie sucks.
I don't know. I think that it just blew my mind because it's like it's not... These are real people, and they're going to get brought into space land or whatever. Space, I guess is what you could just call it.
Alienator. Let me see if this is on Wikipedia.
Oh, boy, I hope not.
That is, yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, dude, Alienator's coming out. He must have crash landed on Earth. It's like that TV show Hard Time on Planet Earth. Remember with the guy from Karate Kid?
Yeah. Sci-fi.
That was my favorite show when I was a kid.
Directed by filmmaker Fred Olen Ray, the producer, director, and screenwriter of over 100 low to medium budget feature films in many genres.
Many genres.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Taglines: an android hunter from outer space is about to create hell on Earth.
Here he comes.
Oh, here's another tagline.
He's having trouble breathing. Dude, I think he's got, like, anaphylactic shock. Somebody better get him with an EpiPen.
Is that Jeff Daniels?
No, but he's driving with a Budweiser in his hand.
Hey, who wouldn't be?
That's not smart.
Here's a
not
synopsis.
Good. She looks like a porn star.
Here's a synopsis. Cole, an evil criminal, escapes from a spaceship to the woods of an American suburb. The commander of the spaceship dispatches the Alienator, a deadly female android, to capture Cole. Who
Tegan
meets,
as the Alienator.
Yeah. It is a porn star. You're right.
Oh,
it's
fantastic.
Gotta be. Gynoid? What's a gynoid? See also gynoid. Please tell me this is something.
Oh,
else.
I don't even think I want to know. Dude, this guy's got his shock collar choking him out.
Wow.
He's escaped, but he can't get the shock collar
Android
off.
Is modeled after a male. Gynoid is a woman. Okay, I never knew that.
Well, now you do. And
let's
knowing.
See, Tegan. Who are you, battle. Tegan? American writer, bodybuilder, and actress. Appeared in the music video California Girls with David Lee Roth. Yes.
Fantastic.
Yes, 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 yes.
How come Critters 2 isn't on right now?
She wasn't in any porn.
At the Hungry Huffer, we won't give you a bum steer. Because that was like the radio promo for...
All right.
you probably you don't have appreciation for Critters at all.
I don't. Or Critters 2 Electric Boogaloo. Search for Critters Gold.
I gotta stop that. Dude, they almost they hit this guy with their whinny.
He'll be alright. He'll probably kill them all.
Do you think they're like... Well, he like
where's
the
Tegan? I want to see Tegan.
I think he's the professor, and they're like the college students, like his grad students that are helping him on some field trip to go do research. And,
right,
like, the
that always happens in real life.
No, but that happens in Sci-Fi Channel original movies. Stupid comedies are...
they're awesome.
They're
That's
great
my favorite
fun.
Type of movie.
Yes, they are great fun, but you definitely need to be in the right movie. And I think it's one of the few things that I enjoy a lot more when I'm with other people. Most other movies I prefer to watch alone, but a good dumb comedy...
No, you know, you're right for the most part, but for some reason, like, if it's one that I've already seen...
Mm-hmm.
I will still absolutely 100% enjoy it just as much if I'm watching it alone.
I'll piecemeal it.
I will watch every time Dumb and Dumber comes on TV. I generally watch it just because it's one of those those are the types of movies where you remember lines and like you wait for these lines that you know are coming to come and they come and you're
yeah,
like
still,
yeah he
it's
said
still pretty
it
funny, yeah.
He said it Even if it's not that funny, yeah, just like, you know.
I guess. I don't know. For me, it's like I'll piecemeal those things, and then I'll be like, oh, well, the funny part's going to come up here in a second. I think where he does that one joke. But by and large, those in some dumb action movies, basically anything where I feel like it's okay for me to kind of talk over it sometimes, then those are fun to watch with the people.
Right.
But I don't like to watch anything I actually really want to watch with other people. I was wondering most everything I see. Not a cloud in the sky. Got the sun in my eyes. And I won't be surprised if it's a dream. My passport photograph
has you with the
has me with the dirt bag thing. That's that's for 10 years. I'm gonna have that passport and I'm gonna have that picture. So
you look like a chimo. Yeah.
In 9 years or so, I'm trying to get into Stockholm because you know I'll be married with a kid.
You got this all planned.
I got a kid like around my shoulder and they're looking at the picture of me dirt bagified, and I've got the thinning hair and I'm fatter than I already am and I'm just like. What the hell is this? So no matter what happens, I lose.